In every generation, there are the chosen ones, the fanboys, the observers, the keepers of useless trivia. They alone must stand against the forces of television drama tropes. They are continuous play.
It's about power. Who's got it? Who knows how to use it? So, what do you guys want to do tomorrow?
Nothing strenuous.
Well, mini golf is always the first thing that comes to mind.
I think you can do better than that.
I was thinking about shopping, as per usual.
Oh, there's an R&B in the new mall.
I think there's a few items.
How we discuss it. Save the world, go to the mall.
I'm having a wicked shoe craving.
Aren't you on the patch?
Those never work. And
here I am, invisible to the eye.
See, I need a new look. It's this whole eye patch thing.
The Earth is definitely doomed.
Welcome to Continuous Plays, The Art of Slaying, a Buffy the Vampire Slayer retrospective featuring Brian Thomas.
But I've known you were coming, I baked the cake.
And Jay Newcastle.
Are you ready to finish this?
Buffy the Vampire Slayer is the copyright of Fox Television Studios, and any discussion of the characters, episodes, or music is strictly for entertainment purposes only.
Welcome to The Art of Slaying, a Buffy the Vampire Slayer retrospective. I'm Jay.
And I'm Brian.
And we're here to talk about Season 7, Episode 11, Showtime, written by David Fists of Fury. More potential slayers arrive at the Summers house, and one of them, Eve, creates tension as she openly voices her fear that Buffy alone cannot save them. Buffy and Xander discover the body of the real Eve and rush home to confront the first, who's infiltrated the group, and she warns them that Drakkon will be coming for them and then disappears. Willow creates a magical barrier to try to keep the vamp out, but it isn't strong enough. Buffy runs one way as bait while the rest of the gang escorts the potential slayers to Xander's construction site to hide. The Drakkon arrives at the site, but Buffy is also there as this was her plan all along. She defeats the Drakkon by cutting his head off, basically, and boosts the potential's confidence, but Spike is still missing. And after enduring tons of painful torture and being tricked by manifestations of Drusilla and even Buffy, Spike is finally greeted by the real Buffy and rescued. They escape and return to her house, and Giles and Anya visit an oracle and discover that Buffy was resurrected, and therefore she created the vulnerability in the Slayer chain that the First is now exploiting, thus explaining the motive behind this wave of attacks. And that is our plot summary, Brian, for Showtime. A lot goes on in this episode, man. We got a lot of moving parts in this one.
Hell in a cell, baby. Yes.
Pretty much. Yeah.
This is fun. You got a lot of, like you said, a lot of things going on. You got Buffy and you got the potential slayers basically questioning everything that's going on after Buffy's big speech on the last episode and basically seeing her beat to crap. They're wondering what's going on and if they even have a chance. And we learn that it's Eve who's really trying to build this tension between the potentials. And most of the potentials are actually trying to combat her with saying, no, I don't think they're not sure they believe what she's saying. And she keeps trying and eventually starts to wear on them. But just as that starts to happen, then we get Buffy to the rescue. And so that was really good. Drakkon, obviously, we wanted to see more of this guy. We get more of this guy. And unfortunately, we get his demise already. But the way they do it is absolutely fantastic. So I'm okay with it. And then you got the torturing of Spike continuing and all that. We'll talk about that because there's some interesting pieces there. But worst of all, Jay, the only part of this whole story that is absolutely retarded and dumb, the Oracle is a big flipping eye.
Yeah, they couldn't come up with a better idea. I mean, that looks like, let's just put two people in a dark room and we got something laying around the prop room we can sort of destroy and make look mangly and weird. Yeah. Cheap. And I understand they gotta have exposition come from a mystical place to pull this off, but
we've had oracles before, Jay. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't we just use one of them? Why did we have to go to this absolutely retarded looking eyeball?
Dude, I have no idea. I mean, again, I think it's part of the fact that they've got so many other things moving in this episode. You got this big action scene at the construction site. You call it Hell in a Cell. It's more like Backyard Brawl to me. And I mean, you've got all that going on. You got to cut the vamp's head off and do that $1 million explosion because that's what it costs to do that. And plus, you've got Spike and all the guest stars coming through to torture him. So there's just a lot of stuff moving around, man. So I think that's the part that got skimped on. And I'll be honest with you, if they had teased that to maybe use in the next episode or something, I'd have been okay with it. I, I didn't know that I needed an answer like immediately.
And I wouldn't say it got skimped on at all because they spent a lot of time on it.
No, I mean skimped on with budget. Like,
well,
they
okay, sure, but, yeah. But the idea they played a lot with it. Like this, apparently this Beljaxa eye is so scary that demons don't want to go see it unless they absolutely have to. And I'm thinking, really?
did Anya's and Giles look scared? Because if they were supposed to look scared, they didn't look very scared.
Right. But Anya was very reluctant to go to it, right? She was very reluctant to even think about it.
That's an example of a problem, you know, though. It's too much tell, not enough show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah, you tell me you're scared, but then when I see you in front of it, you're just sort of standing there. It's not that big of a deal.
Right. And there's not only just standing there, but basically demanding answers.
Yeah, like you want to tell the big floating eye, which has obviously survived, you know, that amount of corporealism for a long time. You better tell me what I want to know. You guys are going down. It's just a little weak.
Yeah, that's by far the weakest part of this whole story. Now, the answer they get is good. I mean, yes. That tells us what we need to know. But mm-hmm. The build-up, the whole thing where, you know, Anya is worried that nobody wants to have sex with her. You know, is it the hair? No, it's not the hair. Oh, this ugly demon doesn't even want it. You know, whatever. That we didn't really need that. I didn't think. And... then going to this, how did they get out, first of all? Because they needed a demon to open this gateway to get in. How did they get back out? I don't know. Anyway, that was just terrible. Now, what we got out of it was good. You know, here's a reason why the first has chosen this time. Buffy's resurrection from the dead opened a vulnerability in the Slayer line and everything else that basically revealed all these potential Slayers. Cause I assume they're all hidden beforehand. And the only people who really know about them is the Watchers Council. Now they've been revealed to evil as who they are. And so the first says, now it's game time. And he's going after to exploit this hole in the protection of Slayers and the line of Slayers. And so that's really interesting that the reason is Buffy. I mean, well, actually the reason is, because Buffy was resurrected by the Scooby Gang. So
this is all Willow's fault.
Well, it's all the Scooby Gang's fault. It's not just Willow's fault. Willow's the instrument that brought her back, but it was everybody's decision to do it.
You're right. The idea that they thought she was in hell, we talked about that last season of, you know, why they would even come to that conclusion.
Yeah.
Really is awful.
Right, right.
But it is what they thought, and that's what they're working off of. So no, I'm with you. I mean, I like that they're at least paying that off. The fact that you know, there's always been consequences for major moves of magic on the show, mm-hmm. right? And this one's a lingering one. In other words, till the very end, you'll regret that happened.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you're glad to have Buffy back, but there have been a lot of problems since that happened.
Yeah.
So, not the least of which is this now. So, I like, though, that they do tell us this vulnerability. I mean, again, I would have been okay if they'd stretched that out for a little bit, but... They reveal it to us. So what that teases me to think, Brian, is that, man, they must really have something coming because we're at the midpoint of the season. This is the midpoint of the season, right?
Yep.
You know, and so they must really have something special coming on, you know, the last half of it if they're going to blow a big secret like this early.
Well, and it's about the time when we start to learn more about what the big bad is, right? And midway right. through the season is when we finally figure out what the big bad is. Now, we've known what the big bad is now for a couple episodes. It's revealed itself already, but now we're getting into what it's after, what it wants, why it's doing what it's doing. And we're getting finally explanations so that as we go through the rest of the season, now it's go time, right? Or at least we hope
right.
it's go time.
Right,
we'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I agree. You know, if anything was going to come of this absolutely horrendous part of the show, at least it's something good. And so we did get a good payoff for having to deal with this retarded thing. So that's good. And that's awesome. So let's go back now and let's talk about the potentials. Because as all this is going on, we have the potential sitting around the house like they like to do and talking and talking and talking. And in this talking, we learn or we see them all basically sitting around talking about the problems that Buffy had with this Uber vamp and are they going to be ready to face this evil? They don't seem ready. What I really liked about this is that as you watch this, you feel like everyone in the group is having doubts, right? But if you actually pay attention, they're not. Eve is the only one who's casting doubts this whole time. They're actually just talking about things that they see, not necessarily saying we can't do this. She's the only one telling them they can't do it and everything else. And they did it so well that you thought that everyone was feeling the same way, when in actuality, it was just Eve trying to put that in that doubt in their mind. And I thought it was well done.
And as we'll also learn here, the first apparently can be in more than one place at once. Because while this is going on, mm-hmm. we've got Spike being tortured, right? Which is manifestations of the first. And this whole time, you know, it's Eve or whatever. It's not really Eve. It's the first.
Yeah.
You know, that's masquerading as her. So that's another thing that's a reveal. The first can be in two places at once. I'm like, dang, you think it's hard to hit one enemy. Try hitting two of them.
Right.
In two different spots. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really cool. And I, you know, I'll be honest with you. It wasn't a surprise to me, not only because I'd seen it before. I barely remember much about this season, but I was like, yeah, that's probably, you know, the first or somebody that the first has put up there to mess with them, because that just seems like to be part of its game is just to talk these people to death. But, you know, I'm okay with that, too, because that I figured that out early, but I didn't expect it to be she'd already killed her or she was already dead from the Bringers and had infiltrated the group. Again, that dropped to me that, oh, wow, the first can be in more than one place at once. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was kind of a neat little thing. And it just goes to show you that it's got godlike features, right? Because, you know, mythology tells us that gods can be in more places than one. And
you mentioned that. We never saw Glory in more than one place at once. Though I guess in fairness, we didn't really see her in god form either, right? So
true, yeah. She was either in the form of Ben or Glory all the time. And who knows? We don't really know that she wasn't necessarily in more than one place at once. She could have been, but yeah. It's just something that is kind of a neat little feature that they put on there, because we never see the first. The first doesn't have a form that we've known. So to be able to send your essence in multiple places is kind of cool.
Well, they've shown us the form of the first a couple times in those weird flashes of, you know, monster vision or whatever, yeah. But it's never anything we could really put a finger on. I'm with you. Yeah. It can be anything, and because it can be anything, it chooses to be the dead of those that it'll affect around itself. I mean, that'll become more of a problem later on, I think. But
basically, after Giles had come and said all these potentials are coming, it's been the gang who's out to find them all, right? And they get word, basically, that a new potential has come to town and that they need to go find her. She's staying at some hotel or whatever. So Xander and Buffy are out to find this new potential. So they had no clue that this new potential is dead and that it's Eve sitting in there, right? They figured Eve's just another potential that's come in, and then why wouldn't they, right? So they're off, and they actually find that it was Eve who's actually dead in this hotel room. And now they've got to run back and say, oh, crap, you know, that we just left the first with all of our potentials. Not good.
Now, can I say this, though? I said before that I thought the first had tipped its hand that it's kind of dumb sometimes. Now I know it is. Mm-hmm. Because it's alone with all of the potential slayers, and yet it can't figure out a way to kill them.
Well, you got to remember, Jay, that the first cannot take corporeal form.
Right.
So how's it going to kill?
Can't it bring the Bringers in to burn the damn house?
Yes, this is a case. True, right? That is a hole. You would have to summon someone to come in there and do that. But I think what it's really trying to do is to get them all to take care of it themselves. And we'll see that as we move forward, that it doesn't necessarily kill on its own if it can.
Well, it can.
If it can get them to do it themselves.
Right. Well, I mean, it can.
Well, I mean,
but
yeah.
That's what I'm saying, though, is it seems like that's a flaw in the plan.
Yeah, I agree.
There's a glitch in the matrix there. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, definitely. So Buffy and Xander then arrive back and confront the first and basically tell the first to leave them alone and get out. And the first basically says, ha, you have no idea. I'm coming for you, and you're screwed. You're not going to win.
Rakan is coming, and he's already kicked your butt once, and wait till he gets you behind the movie theater again. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, round two is coming. And I like Buffy's little plan here, right? This idea of, okay, you get him. I'm going to go one way, and you get him to go the other, and Willow, you do this spell to keep the vamp out, but all that really does is draw him to it. But as we learn, that's Buffy's plan all along, is she wants the thing to follow them so she can kill it in front of all of them. She needs to do that in front of them to get them to realize, hey, we're going to be okay.
And so they call on Willow, as always, who is very reluctant again to use her magic, but she does build what she hopes is a good enough barrier to keep the vampire out. She's done this before, right? But obviously not to an uber vamp. But she's done this before, built barriers to keep Spike and Angel and other vampires out of the Summer's house. As we know, they have to be invited. However, apparently that doesn't hold true for the Trakhan, who easily gets into the house with the Bringers, and no invitation needed.
Yeah. That's another little development there that even, you know, somebody like the Master would have had to have been invited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is, that makes these even more dangerous.
Absolutely.
You know, and what could be funny about that is, you know, we sit here and say, pay attention to your own lore and follow your own rules. But if you break them like this for, like, exceptions to the rules, now that's cool to me. I like that. Because it adds a level of danger and tension that otherwise you'd have to come up with some contrived way to, you know, put forth.
Absolutely.
And this way, it makes sense. He's just so awesome and so tough that you'd have to use even extra special magic to keep him out. And even that won't work.
No, and it doesn't. And I agree with you. I think it's a neat little aside, right? I mean, to give him extra powers. And we already know he can't be staked.
Right.
That didn't work. So to have him be able to just barge into a house makes sense. I mean, to me, it makes sense. Now, here's an interesting piece. We know that a vampire needs to be invited unless the owner is dead. So because Joyce is dead, maybe
you
can come in.
I don't know. But you know, I don't know. Did it pay attention to the fact that the transfer of ownership had gone to Buffy?
Well, did it really
go down? Did it go down to City Hall?
Do we know that the transfer went to Buffy?
Somebody's paying taxes on that house. That's all I'm saying.
Doesn't mean that that it's in her name.
Well, okay, but then everybody else is still alive. That might be. Maybe
it's just a question. It's just a question.
I don't know. That's an interesting question.
Because they have to use spells to keep other vampires out, right?
Well, hold on. Maybe it's because, again, you know, her resurrection brings a chink in the line, right? Maybe it's because she has been dead.
Could be.
You know, and that's...
And then the house isn't in Don's name, so, yeah,
right,
you never know.
Right,
that, I think it's. I think
sense.
It's something to think about. I doubt that they went that thought far in thought, but
hey,
it's something.
You know what? You mentioned somebody there that we haven't talked about in a couple episodes. Dawn.
Yeah.
She's just kind of loafing around right now, man. There's, you know, they hadn't figured out what to do with her.
That'll change here soon. But I agree. You know, Dawn has been a great character so far. And she's basically just hanging around the Potentials and watching how everything's going down and trying to help where she can. She's basically research mode.
Yeah, she's taking over like Willow season 1 and 2 research girl mode. That's kind of what she does now. So,
which is fine. I'm okay with that. So. We'll see. We'll see more of her very, very soon. So no need to worry, Jay. You'll get your Dawn fix. No problem.
Well, okay. I want to talk about two things. One, how about the way Buffy kills the vamp when she, you know, gets the wire and basically just cuts his head off.
First, let's talk about the setup of the fight. We've mentioned this before, and we'll mention it now. When the hell did Xander, Buffy, and Willow get the ability to talk to each other without talking?
Yeah, telepathic.
Right.
Yeah.
What happened? How did this come about? Is Willow using magic? Because she's been reluctant to do that before. So why would she use it for this?
I'm with you. When did they develop that ability? And that would have been much more useful many other times.
Yes.
When did that come about? It seems like a shortcut.
It does. I understand why they did it, because they didn't want to reveal the plan in open for someone to hear. So I get why they did it. It just was kind of like, how did this come about? Why now can we just, hey, guess what? Blah, 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 in my mind, and you hear it.
If the first is really transcendent above all these mortal things, right? Why couldn't it just tap into that anyway? It seems like it would know that. It seems to know everything else.
I don't know.
You know? That I don't know. That, to me, it's the weakest part of this. Why couldn't they just go, like, look at each other, walk out of the room, and just have a conversation? Nobody would have thought anything about it.
Yeah. I don't know. Just, again, just so nobody overhears anything is my only thought on that, but you could have gone outside or something. I don't know.
Right.
It just seems
each other a note.
Yeah, it just note. It just seems odd that all of a sudden is the ability. But whatever, they do it that way, and now we've got a plan hatched. They don't really give us the specifics of the plan, other than they're just talking to each other about this stuff and whatever. But the plan is fantastic. Now, at last we saw Buffy on this Trach Han, is she got her tail whipped hardcore, and the potential saw the beating she took. So they're afraid, and rightfully so. But apparently Buffy has come up with a plan to show them that no matter how strong or big or tough the evil is, we will defeat it. And she basically said that in her little speech that she gave at the end of last episode. And now she's going to prove it to him. And basically the Tarak Han and all the bringers come to the house, and they basically waste everything Xander has been doing to the house now. So he has to go ahead and do it again, which I think is funny. But quickly the potentials are escorted away, and Xander takes them to his construction site, which I think is still at the school, if I'm not mistaken, but could be somewhere else. I'm not sure. And they're all basically up in the scaffolding of this construction site. And here comes Buffy and Tarak Han, and it's time for the backlot brawl, hell in the cell, you know, Tarak Han versus Buffy, loser dies. Match.
Loser leaves town.
Loser dies match. And talk about a fight scene. This is probably one of the best fight scenes we've had since Angel Buffy fights. I mean,
oh, I agree.
Fantastic fight scene between the Tarak Han and Buffy here. It was just full of action, drama. You saw, you know, the potentials wanted to come help, and Willow and Xander are telling them, nope, back off. And they have to have a lot of faith that Buffy knows what she's doing too, because she's getting tail whooped a lot of time in this fight, and they have to hold back. And she basically told them, do not help. You need to hold back when I'm doing this. I know what I'm doing. Have faith in me. And you could see that they're a little worried in this, and they're starting to wane on their faith that Buffy knows what she's doing here.
Well, Buffy's doing the old Muhammad Ali rope-a-dope. She's drawing the thing in so she can get close enough to, you know, wrap that razor wire around its throat and cut its head off, because she knows they can't stake it. You know, she's already figured that out. So what's the next best thing you do with a vampire? Well, it's either sunlight or holy water, or I got to cut its head off. Well, I don't really have a priest handy. It's not going to be sunlight for a while. How about I just cut its head off and we just move on with our lives? Plus, that's a really violent way to kill something, and that'll really scare these chicks and make them realize, hey, I mean what I say.
Yeah.
And so I was cool with that. Mm-hmm. I liked that was her method. Was, you know, and besides, she's working on the thing's own self-confidence. It had whipped her so bad before. Granted, it would think, oh, I've got this.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And no, you don't. So I don't know. I thought it was cool. I was down.
Yeah, and I liked the ending to the fight with the barbed wire. I thought that was a brilliant way to do it. She obviously is not going to have a weapon there to cut its head off. Otherwise, you know, that'd be kind of weird to be fighting her with a weapon. But to use the barbed wire that's already at the construction site and to basically choke it till its head came off, I thought was brilliant, and it worked really well. And then, of course, after the fight is over, she looks up at them and says, the lesson is now over.
Again, man, satisfied with the way this ended. I didn't care for the telepathy thing, but the fight was awesome.
The fight was fantastic.
And we got to give it up to Camden Toy, the stuntman. We called him out a couple episodes ago. Again, excellent work once again on this show. He always seems to really bring it, but this may be the best he's ever done on the show. I mean, this is fantastic.
It's very good. Stunt work. Very good.
And well directed. Well done. Like I said, they did a good job of building in the action in this episode. And it needed to happen, too.
Oh, yeah.
Let's call it. I mean, that needed to be a part of what they were doing. So I was down with it.
I was down with it, too. It was a great battle and a good lesson for the potentials to say, hey, we may look like we're beaten down and we get out, but look, I had the willpower to do this, and I made it happen, and you can, too.
Right.
And I think that's a powerful lesson that these potentials need to know, is you got to put faith in yourself that you can do it. And even when it looks like you can't, you just believe, and you can do it. And we're powerful. We're very powerful, and we'll take it.
I almost feel like some four-leaf clover should spring
on
the ground, because that's the same speech that dude gave Leprechaun. gave Jennifer Aniston.
You take that leprechaun out of this episode, sir.
Oh, the memories, Brian. So.
Yeah. Let's talk about the last piece that we need to discuss here, Jay, and that is the continued torture of Spike by Drusilla, or the manifestation of Drusilla. And basically what she's we figure out what she's trying to do. She's trying to turn him on Buffy, basically saying, you know, Buffy is not going to come for you. No matter what you do, you're just a vampire. You don't mean anything to her. I mean, what would she care about you? And basically the first is trying to wear him down to the point where he will basically turn on Buffy and join his side, which I think is kind of silly, but, that's what it's trying to do to him in the form of Drusilla. But Spike never gives up. And you could see after being beaten so severely, what is he saying? She believes in me. She believes in me. She believes in me, over and over again. And no matter what this first is tries to do, it cannot shake that faith that he has in Buffy, that she will come and she will rescue him. And lo and behold, Jay, what happens at the end of this episode? Buffy comes and rescues.
Even when it manifests as Buffy to him, which we've seen it do before, you know?
Every time that the first manifests itself as Buffy, it's always wearing black or dark colors. Hmm. But any time that Buffy shows up to Spike when it's not the first, she's usually wearing a light color, and she shows up in a white outfit, I think it was, at the end of this episode to save him. Hmm. And so that's kind of, I think, the trigger here to know when the first is playing. Now, Buffy wears a lot of black in this series too, but usually she's wearing a brighter color when it's Buffy, not the first, and a darker color when it's Buffy the first.
You know what? I've never picked up on that. I'll have to pay attention to that going forward to see if that's for real, but that's a good catch. So, all the She Believes in Me, I'm just in my head is ringing the old Kenny Rogers song. And she believes in me. You're not wrong. I think that's exactly right. Is he will never give up on Buffy, because that goes both ways. She clearly hasn't given up on him after all the times that you and I begged her to, wanted her to, and everybody else has too. She's still hanging in there with the old boy. You know, after everything that they've done to each other, she's still there. And so I don't know. I like that faith in her is what kept him alive, because that's the underlying episode theme here, is need to have some faith in Buffy. The potentials do, and Spike does.
Yeah.
And you know, and it really reaffirms what Xander and Willow have seen 100 times too, but it now makes this new group on the same level.
I agree. And it's nice. If we're going to keep up with Spike and Buffy, it's nice to have something like this happen and really show that she's not just there because of a relationship for sex. You know, she's actually there because she finds a lot of good in Spike and he's useful, right? He's useful to her, and she actually looks at him now as a friend instead of an enemy, which is good.
Well, he's more useful to her than if he were on the other side.
Oh, absolutely.
That part of that is playing in, and she knows I'm not about to let you get him.
Yeah, wow.
You know, so
that could be, yeah.
Else,
that could be.
Yeah, so we can explore that in future episodes. But Brian, I think we're at the point of the podcast where it's time to give our final thoughts and Dustin's ratings. So what are yours for Season 7, Episode 11, Hashiota?
Other than the Oracle piece, which that part of the story was kind of stupid, there were some funny parts in it, and I'll give it that. I'm going to give this a four Dustings, Jay, even though with that Oracle piece, it didn't bring it down enough, because there was a lot of good action. The Spike storyline was still interesting, you know, all of that stuff. The Eve thing was done well. Just the way that they did that, cut it and made you think that everyone was doubting Buffy. It wasn't. It was just a good episode. So I'm giving it a four Dustings. It's the strongest one we've had in a long time.
I think it's very strong as well. Again, the Oracle part really drags it down, but that's only a small portion of this. The reveals are important. The fights are awesome. And the way it works out in the end is as where I want it. I mean, this is a really well done episode. It's how it should be done. I mean, it's how the show should go. And in its best moments, they look a lot like Showtime. So I'm with you. I'm going to give it a four Dustings. It's not the strongest thing I've seen, but it's one of the best ones of this season so far, for sure. And one of the strongest ones we've had in a few weeks. So I'm going to give it a four Dustings and see where we go down the road next time. Folks, thanks for joining us on this latest episode of The Art of Slang. You can always find the back catalog of our episodes on our website, theartofslang.com. You can hook up with us on our social media there, Facebook and Twitter. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. Do you agree, disagree with us? We always enjoy interacting with you all, the fans. Until next time, for Brian, I'm Jay. Thanks for listening to The Artist Lane.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer is the copyright of Fox Television Studios, and any discussion of the characters, episodes, or music is strictly for entertainment purposes only.